Blog Talk Radio.
I tell you,
there's a lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gown right here in Baltimore.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. It is the third day of March 2011. I am Sinbad, and I am joined by Katrair. How are you doing, Katrair?
I'm fine.
Good, man. Good, man. First thing I want to say, though, before we get into the show, everybody, I am sorry. I am sorry we've not done a show for a long time. And I just want to say that it's 100% my fault. I just took a new job, and I'm working like 6 or 7 days a week. Because as a lot of people know, I am getting married this July, and I'm just trying to, you know, put back as much money as I possibly can. So I'm working a lot, and I keep putting off doing the show. So Katrair and I are going to try doing it really late just so I could get it in every week. So that's the plan for right now. So
this is going to be our restart show, like TNA or WCW.
It'll
get better
start...
as the shows go on.
Yes, it will. This is our... The main event for this show is going to be the Bret Hart signing with WCW. So let's go ahead and start with we were at Halloween Havoc the night before, and they did this lame storyline where they had a fan run in, and it was like it was like a pre-planned thing, and it looked stupid, and it was the famous Age in the Cage match. That it was famously known as later, because it was Roddy Piper versus Hulk Hogan inside of the cage, front ends, bunch of and this is like the beginning of the ruining the cage gimmick. You know, if people run into a cage, what's the point? What's the point of
especially
even having a cage?
Fan runs the cage.
Yes, a fan makes it in there. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. All right, so. The show
and I believe the fan running in is what started like a little later. Fans just running in at random on shows, you know.
Oh yeah,
because it kind of cursed the whole thing.
All right, now Randy Savage, who's with Hogan and Bischoff, of course, after the night before, come out to open Nitro. Hogan's challenging people from the crowd to come fight him, like the night before. They play a little clip from his movie, and that's pretty much it for the opening segment. It's just the same old crap, you know.
Yeah.
Wash, rinse, repeat. We said we at this point. The still-masked Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio was actually scheduled to lose the match and the mask to Eddie Guerrero the night before, and they changed it last minute, which why did they change it? Was it just...
I think a bunch of the luchadors and Ray were, like, upset about it because, you know, the masks were a big deal back then, especially in Mexico. I mean, to lose your mask, that was, like, a real big deal, and I think they just... I don't know why they didn't do it. It is because so many of them complained about it that they just decided not to do it, so...
Yes. there's a... something that happened in this match that kind of is going to segue into something else. Raven and his entourage show up during this match. And, of course, Bobby Heenan says, "Oddballs are us," which is funny because they're different, you know. And just, you know, Bobby Heenan would knock people, you know, wrestlers, but he'd put them over, too. You know what I mean? He'd do it in a way where he would,
wasn't Michael,
you know,
Cole.
Yes. Well, someone that was in WCW at the time, Larry Zbyszko, which we've kind of discussed before on some of the things that he said. Larry Zbyszko never put anybody over, really, except for himself. He would just make these, like, you know, these comments that were just passive-aggressive and, you know, just put himself over all the time and would just say bad things about everybody else. And I was actually, I'm reading the Chris Jericho book. I downloaded it from my Kindle the day that I had it pre-ordered and just was hoping to wake up the next morning and have it there. And it was there, and I've been reading it. And when Chris Jericho was calling himself, like, you know, living legend. Just, you know what I mean? Just saying that, like saying he was the best champion of all time. He actually got sued by Larry Zbyszko. Because Larry Zbyszko sued
him.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And the funniest thing was when he was, when Chris Jericho actually had to, you know, give testimony to, you know, Zbyszko's lawyers and his attorneys, there was an interview with Chris Jericho in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and they used that as quote, like, of Chris Jericho saying, like, hey, Larry Zbyszko's, like, the original living legend. And he's like, I didn't even do that interview. That magazine's fake. And, of course, the case blew up in their face at that point. But just reading that interview.
This is the third that they got to, like, the stage where you hadn't talked to a lawyer.
Yes, yes. No, it's absurd that it got to that stage based off of something that was said in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So,
well, plus, Larry Zbyszko stole that name from Bruno Sammartino.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Oh, and I remember Larry Zbyszko, he would talk about how when Jericho was a champion, he'd talk about how small Jericho was. Well, fuck, Larry Zbyszko was about the same. I'd say even Chris Jericho was bigger than Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah, he was not a very big man at all. Not a very big man at all. All right, so the Nitro girls come out and dress up like the Village People, except for one of them wearing a cat suit for some reason. Glacier pins La Parka with a chronic kick. And this, like, WCW at this point was, I mean, people say it all the time, and the similarities between WCW and TNA are, you know, it's ridiculous just how unlike they are. Where wins and losses don't really matter, they just, you know, they do that booking where, you know, someone will get a pin on someone and then that person will pin them the next week. The even Steven booking, as Brian Alvarez will call it. And it's just, I mean, it was always stuff like this. But the thing is, you know, that can work at some point, like when there's a mid-card feud maybe. But it's hard to break out of the pack when you lose matches like that. Like, La Parka after that DDP thing was pretty freaking over. And
yeah,
I always thought that
wasn't involved except for his outfit. You know?
Yeah, he lucked into that. And if that was in the WWE, you know, I honestly think they would have embraced it maybe, you know, and gave him a little bit of a push because, I mean, La Parka was a good worker. He was one of the better luchadors. Because a lot of those luchadors, like, you know, El Dandy and Ciclope and Damian 666 and all those guys, they were just bodies. They were just bodies that did flippy shit. You know, there was only, like, there's one, the ones that would stick out were, you know, Ray Jr., Alto Dragon, Psychosis, La Parka, and then eventually Blitzkrieg I liked a lot when he eventually showed up. But, you know, it was just, La Parka could have been, you know, had a bigger role, but of course, you know, that would have never happened just because it was in WCW and, you know, the inmates were running the asylum, so.
You're not doubting El Dandy, are you?
I actually am. I am. DDP comes out, he accepts Hulk Hogan's challenge. But I'm pretty sure Hogan challenged the fans, but DDP apparently is gonna
fight
him.
Well, he looks like
him.
A fan, so
He looks. He looks like a fan that was at Road Wild that, you know, woke up the next day like was laying in the grass. Larry Zbyszko comes out for an interview, even though he's an announcer, but he's getting an interview. He says that he's fed up and that Eric Bischoff is getting a one-way ticket to Larryland. And, or not Larry Zbyszko, but Scott Hall. And anywhere, Scott Hall and Sick show up. Hall sends his best to Kevin Nash, who's recuperating in Phoenix. And they replay footage of Zbyszko getting punked the night before. And Larry tries getting Hall to come to the ring. Hall and Six, of course, and go back to the dressing room, and that's it. And the Nitro Girls are out again, and we should give a little a rundown of who the Nitro Girls are. You know, there was Tao, she was the black one. There was, what was it, Che? She was the Asian
Che,
one,
she
right?
was the Asian one, right?
Yeah, that got fucked by Kevin Nash, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
she looked
right.
Like Che, I always thought looked like the girl from California Dreams, the Asian girl.
I know who you're talking about.
AC Jazz. She had long blonde hair. There was Fire. She was named Fire because she had like the reddish hair that was long. Then there was the little blonde. Her name was Spice. She had short hair, and she
was the one that was in the angle with Medusa and Evan Courageous the next year.
Yes, she was, and she actually
the cruiserweight title.
Yeah, she'd make these goofy facial expressions, and she always reminded me facially of Earl's ex-wife in My Name Is Earl. Like facially, I thought she looked a lot like that chick. I don't know her name; I forgot. And then, of course, there's Kimberly.
That was the chick that played the trailer park girl in other redneck movies.
Yes, that's pretty much it. So. Lex Luger comes out, Russell Stevie Ray.
You forgot one there, didn't you?
Whisper is later. Whisper was from the Nitro Girls contest.
Oh, that's right.
Come on, Contreras.
Well, I can remember when a Nitro Girl like entered the group. Like I didn't follow them that close.
Man, you can remember what color Scott Hall's shoelaces were on a house show in somewhere in Alabama in 1996. How can you remember? Lex Luger, Russell's Stevie Ray, and what was an amazing match, and of course beats him with the torture rack, and Lex Luger had such awesome theme music. I mean, it was just...
He had the generic theme music that you would hear in, commercials and shit.
Oh, yeah, I know, but, I mean, I still loved it. It was like dun, 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 dun. It was bam, bam, bam. And it was just and he just came out and, the crowd was into it. Like, I remember when I would go to Nitro and I'd hear that music. I'm dead serious. I would immediately stand up and cheer on Luger. I was a big Total Package fan. He's awesome.
People thought he was bad back then, but he was legitimately the number two babyface or maybe number three in the company that year from 97.
Yeah, he was just Luger's awesome. He's just great.
Yeah.
Raven cuts a promo. When Raven was doing those promos, a lot of the stuff, I really do think he was on drugs at this point. Well, I mean, I think he was on drugs from 1994 through last year or so, because it just didn't make a lot of sense, and would just go
and
on
this
and on
time,
and on.
He'd been there since June and had one match. I'm like, just start wrestling, please, and these promos, please. I'm over these promos by now.
Yes, of course. Eddie Guerrero beat Chris Jericho. Which is crazy that Jericho even wrestled, because the night before he had that horrible bump where it looked like he killed himself.
I think he almost broke himself in half.
Yeah. And this is a hell of a match, too. Jericho and Eddie Guerrero, they would have good matches with each other. They never really did much in the WWF with each other. Also in Jericho's book, might as well point this out, too. They were supposed to, Jericho and Eddie Guerrero were supposed to fly somewhere, for a show, and they happened to be on the same flight, and the flight got delayed by a day. And this was right when Jericho was leaving the company. So he actually got to spend an extra day with Eddie Guerrero and, have a good conversation with him. It was the the night before the Raw that it was Raw when he got Bear Bischoff. So he said that he was very thankful that that flight got delayed for a day because he got to spend, you
probably
know.
Probably the last time he saw him, huh?
Yeah, that was the last time he saw him. So that was you know, a little interesting thing. And, that, like, you know, things, it's weird because, like, you know, things like that work out, you know, sometimes. And it seems bad at the time, but, you know, it's cool just how it worked out, you know.
Yeah, you know, Jericho, he, it's kind of strange, you know, like two of his real good friends, Guerrero and Benoit, he wasn't, like, there when they both passed away. You know, he was gone.
Yes, and he, I believe, like, at the beginning of his first book, he said he was able to break the rules. He was able to go back and change some things. Because apparently he had some stories about Chris Benoit, like, in there that made him seem worse than he, you know, made him seem pretty bad. And he took it out and changed it because of the whole murder and stuff. So, that's, you know, that's pretty interesting stuff, just how that works out, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he idolized Benoit. He really did. I mean, he was a really big fan of his. I mean, we all liked him a lot.
Like most people did, I'm sure.
You know? he was like a working man's wrestler, you know, like people that liked wrestling, like from the old school. Benoit was like kind of like a star for those people because I like work rate wrestling, you know. I do. I don't really pay attention to the Ring of Honor and all that shit now, the indie stuff, and like of the, you know, the chain wrestlers and stuff. But I mean, I like those guys. I like Daniel Bryan. I like guys that can work good matches. I mean, you know, my favorite wrestler of all time is Shawn Michaels, and I think he's like the epitome of like a, you know, a wrestler that can really work a good match with anybody. And Benoit was the same way. So, you know.
Yeah, Benoit was he was one of those guys. He was small, but he could work with anybody. Even like he could wrestle like with the big guys, like the Big Show or somebody like that, and he could wrestle with the small guys. And I mean, he was just, I mean, if you watched Chris Benoit and you couldn't get into him as a wrestler, then, you know, I don't even know why you watch professional wrestling to begin with.
You speak about Benoit with the Big Show. I remember there was a rumble right before WrestleMania 20, and the last two men were Big Show and Benoit. And I remember thinking, like, how is he going to eliminate the Big Show? You know, he's little and Big Show is giant. And the way he did that finish of him, like, choking him and dragging him over the top rope, it made so much sense.
Edge of your seat.
It was awesome. It was what a great finish.
It was like he was very slowly going over the top rope, just like an inch at a time, it seemed like.
Because he was slowly passing out. That's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, just great. It was, speaking of Benoit wrestles Fit Finley and beats him after a diving headbutt. And
I'm pretty sure this was a good match.
Yeah, hard-hitting match. Ric Flair comes out for an interview with Scheme Gene and just, you know, goes nuts, just giving his typical Ric Flair interviews, just saying, you know, he's angry with Kurt Hennig, and just this whole storyline where, you know, obviously I think he's getting the push, you know what I mean? He is. He's going to be. But Ric Flair kind of got buried so bad in this situation. There's no way he could look good, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
Flair's one of those guys that I wish he'd stuck up for himself a little bit more back then.
Yeah, but he had no confidence.
Yeah. Well, when they beat it out of you for so many years, you know, it's like you give up.
So the WCW jobber, like the main WCW jobber, essentially Scotty Riggs, was beat by Raven, where Raven did a spot where he gives him a drop toe hold, and he lands like out of there, you know, and he acted like he hurt his eye, so he started wearing this eye patch because he just thought it looked cool. And that was the reason that he did it. I remember this Pro Wrestling Illustrated one time where Scotty Riggs like got his picture taken backstage, and he was wearing this like skin tight T-shirt, and these pair of jean shorts that were, like, clearly cut from a pair of jeans that were so high up on his thigh. I mean, it was just way, way too high up on his thigh. It was just so uncomfortable. What a...
And I was talking about, you know, Raven hasn't wrestled yet, and here he wrestled first match, and probably went, like, probably 15 seconds before this drop toe hold in the chair happened. So.
Yes. Yes, and supposedly Raven still is not signed with WCW, and he will only wrestle if it's Raven's rules.
And they, like, give J.J. Dillon a contract, and J.J. gave it back, and J.J. said that all this stuff was marked out. He said he'd never seen a contract with so many red lines through all a bunch of stuff, and I think they signed a contract from there or something like that, because Raven had put in a bunch of demands or something. I can't remember.
Yes. Yes, and why, you know, why do you even want to sign him if he's being a little jerk like that? I don't know. DDP beats Hogan in a non-title match. That's disqualification when a fake Sting interferes on Hogan's behalf. Just, I don't know.
Boring.
Boring stuff, yes. And when the real Sting comes, the first member of the NWO to hit the ring, of course, is Vincent. Because I don't care what anybody says, I will still stand by this. Vincent was the toughest member of the NWO. He wasn't as big as the Giant or Kevin Nash, you know, as famous as Hogan or, you know, Six and those guys. But, man, he was double tough. He would actually come back. He would, like, get speared by Goldberg and, like, take the Steiner's finisher, and then he'd get back up for more because he was that tough, you know. Like, Buff Bagwell would get his freaking airbrush top hat knocked off his head. But Vincent was just tough, man. It's supposed to be Disco Inferno versus Goldberg. Alex Wright tries attacking Goldberg. And then Alex Wright ends up trying to beat up on Goldberg, but of course Goldberg kills
Goldberg
him.
Goldberg didn't win every match. Did not win every match his first in his run.
Yes, and then Disco starts laughing at Alex Wright. And then he, of course, gets jackhammered as well. And Goldberg and Mongo have to be separated, of course. So that's a feud for the ages. Steve Mongo McMichael versus Bill Goldberg. So
this really teaches youngster how to, you know, how to work. Let's put him in there with Mongo McMichaels.
So the Steiner brothers.
Well,
they are defending the title.
Hogan and Bischoff came to the ring before this.
Oh yeah.
They were all mad about what Sting had done, and they were hawking his new movie on TNT tomorrow night. Said they're going to sign the contract for Starrcade with Sting tomorrow night during the movie. They don't tell you when, so you got to watch this shit fest. That's what this movie is. Because it's going to take place during the commercial breaks, but you don't know when, son.
Oh. All right. And the thing is, like, I didn't even watch the movie. I didn't even try to watch the movie because I remember thinking, like, okay, you're just going to sign a piece of paper? Who gives a shit? Why would anybody care? But people did.
It didn't even have anything cool in that movie, like the... At least Thunder in Paradise had the cool-ass, like, a Knight Rider boat, you know?
What was this movie? I don't remember.
Was it Escape from Devil's Island, like, had Carl Weathers in it?
Oh, well, that's already a classic movie. I've actually seen that movie. It's not bad. I liked Hogan as an actor.
It's Hulk Hogan. I wasn't expecting anything more.
Yeah, you shouldn't expect
that. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was definitely an awesome movie. And the thing is, when you know what to expect, like, you know, you should just accept what it is and just watch it and enjoy it. Like, a lot of my friends don't understand why I love Nicolas Cage. I love the actor Nicolas Cage. He's just awesome. he has the same movie a lot, but I know what that same movie is going to be, and it's always great. It's always just wacky Nicolas Cage. So it's just you accept what you want to accept. If you don't want to accept it, then don't accept it. That's just.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say right here, you know, I love watching these WWE movies.
Yeah.
I like watching fucking John Cena and the Marine. I like seeing him in there with, like, ageless actors, like in, I can't remember what movie that was. It had Danny Glover in it and people like
Legendary.
12 Round and stuff like that. And I'll probably, like, watch this Randy Orton movie and I'll probably watch The Chaperone whenever it comes out, like, on pay-per-view or something like that. I love watching that shit.
The Chaperone comes out on DVD on Tuesday, and I'm going to buy it. My girlfriend has already said that she wants us to get that because we love Modern Family, and I love Triple H, so, you know. And that little girl's from Modern Family.
I love all those movies.
We're going to get it.
Those movies are fun.
Yeah, yeah. Legendary was actually a pretty good movie. I liked it.
I've seen The Marine, and I've seen 12 Rounds.
Oh, what you should see is, I don't know if you ever saw the Steve Austin movie. That actually legitimately was a good movie. It was awesome.
Was that the one where he was on the island with, like, the convicts?
Yes.
I can't remember the name of it. I know what you're talking about that you can't remember.
I don't remember what it's called either.
Look in DM. All
right. So, Steiner Brothers beat Public Enemy to retain the tag titles. They thank the fans. The announcers put over that the contract signing with Sting is tomorrow night as an intro to Assault on Devil's Island. Kurt Hennig beats Booker T by DQ. Because Flair interfered. Sorry. Elizabeth got a second set of implants. Like around this time, and boy, were those were some big titties. Yeah, her boobs got bigger. They definitely did. Like fall of '97, they got pretty big. And Flair beat Macho Man by DQ because Kurt Hennig interfered. What is wrong with me? Ric Flair's going after Randy Savage during this, and Savage puts Elizabeth in front of him, and Flair grabs her and gives her a kiss, just like that 1991 angle, or 92 angle. And what an awesome storyline. I loved that. I loved that. This not so much, but I loved that.
I love because they doctored those photos perfectly in the WWF magazine, make it look exactly like Ric Flair was in like all these... Elizabeth all these times.
And that was before Photoshop, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So they have Monday Nitro the next week. They show footage of the contract signing. And Hogan says that Sting didn't show. And then he signs the contract without looking at it. And
it didn't matter anyway.
It did not matter. It just didn't matter. It's a contract. It's legally binding. So, in a very random match, to open Nitro, is Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko versus Rey Mysterio Jr. and Lord Regal. And
sounds like a battle bowl match.
Yeah, it was. It was just, it made no sense.
I mean, should Eddie have been with Regal and Dean with Ray?
Yes, and the best part of it, right after the end of the match, Mysterio gets pinned. Regal looks down at him, just shakes his head. I remember seeing this and thinking, like, what the hell is going on? Just shakes his head and walks away. Then they announced there's going to be some exciting news about Roddy Piper. So Piper has nerve damage and will be out for an undetermined length of time.
That's exciting.
That's exciting news.
Oh, great. Well, I guess so, if you don't have to watch another cage match. Sure.
Yes. So, Fit Finley beat Squire David Taylor with a tombstone. And that's it. You know, it seems like to me they put these like little dumb matches just so they could, like, get over that Raven is sitting in the, you know, in the audience. Like, it was like the
or
only purpose of the match.
Something that had nothing to do with the match.
Yes. Yes. They had this commercial for the WCW and NWO World Tour video game. Wait, have we talked about those video games yet?
I don't know. I think we may have. I can't remember which one. I may have WCW in WCW / NWO versus the World or something like that.
That's a good game. That is a good game. And there's also there was a game called WCW NWO Revenge. That game was so great. Yeah, I have talked about that. We have talked about that. There is one game, though, that came out for PlayStation. It was called WCW Nitro. And my friend Jerry and I, we pre-ordered it. We were so excited. It was at Toys R Us. We pre-ordered it, and we each spent $50 to get it. You know, it was just so awesome. And it was the fucking worst game I've ever played. I mean, it was just so bad. It was before Sting spoke. It was before Sting spoke on Nitro. Like, you know, it was like during his quiet phase. And you'd scroll over him, and he would say, like, you know, I'm going to kick your butt or something. Like, and he just spoke. It's like, why? Why are they doing that? Why can't he just be quiet, like on TV? But no, it was just,
I still say the best pro wrestling game ever was pro wrestling for the NES, Nintendo Entertainment System.
Are you serious with Starman?
I love Starman. I could pile drive that fucker like 10 times on the floor and I could still gonna beat him.
Yeah, you couldn't. You really couldn't. Well, the best game of all time is either WCW NWO Revenge or WWF No Mercy, which are both for 64. And like the gameplay for those games were awesome because it was like realistic timing. Like it was like exactly like a real match. It was like the perfect timing. Like now it's just like way too fast. And Mark Henry running after you.
I haven't played a wrestling video game, and I kind of got out of them because I don't know. I didn't really get into them just because I don't know. It was kind of boring, I guess. So.
Well, see, I'm like I have aged so much over the last 10 years. I feel that like I can't play a new video game. I'm like an old man that, like, I mean, seriously, like, you know when, like, yeah, you can't buy your grandparents a Blu-ray player for a reason because they have no idea what the hell's going on. Like, you know, like, what is this? They still have VCRs.
You'll be getting 10 phone calls to how to work it.
Yes. That's how I am with video games. Like, I'll look down and I'll see all those buttons. I'll be like, fuck this. I am going to go. That's why I collect toys, because toys are easy. You know, they're easy to collect.
Yeah, the
video games.
I mean, I still buy like the Xbox 360 and stuff like that. I still buy those games, and yeah, it's when you get into them, it's a little bit easier. But yeah, I know what you're saying about all the buttons and stuff you have to do. Plus, on those wrestling games, sometimes it's just too much to me. Like those fighting games like that. Okay, press X four times, then press down three times, then press backwards seven times. You know, to get to a move. So my reflexes ain't that good.
Oh, yeah, I forgot, like, about a year ago, a year or two ago, I had a 360 just for the UFC game. I was playing the UFC game and the TNA game and then SmackDown versus Raw games. And, like, the guy I got it from some guy on Craigslist. And he put a chip, so he gave me, like, free games. Like burned copies of free games and shit. And I was playing these games, and like I tried for a long period of time. Actually a long period of time, it was like a month. And then like I just gave up. I was like, this is stupid, and I sold it. I bought it bought it, played it for a month, and then sold it. So
by the time I pushed in like a certain move I wanted to do, the guy had already like clotheslined me or something. So it was
what was the point?
I just get into the killing games now. You know, just like the war games and stuff like that. They're easier to play.
Oh yeah, that's cool. So they have a little promo for WCW Saturday Night. Lex and the Giant are in a tag team match. I love that. They'd advertise that for Saturday Night, like Lex Luger and Lex Luger and the Giant in a tag team match. And then they end up wrestling like the Barrio Brothers or whatever. And like that, you know, that it'd be so great. It's so great. Like you'd check it out and they'd like Canadians or something. You know, just a throwaway jobber match, but it's still cool. All right. So, Eric Bischoff calls in, says that Larry Zbyszko is a chump, and he said that Hogan challenged Sting on several occasions, but he never showed because he's a coward. So, and then he says that the nerve damage to Piper matches the brain damage that he must have because he got in a cage with Hogan. Awesome. And then he talks about how great Assault on Devil's Island was. And he said that Vince McMahon actually tried running the Survivor Series against it to try taking attention away from Hogan's movie, but it did not work.
Oh, yeah, this was when they he ran like a Survivor Series flashback special, and it was all guys in WCW getting beat, like at Survivor Series or something.
Oh, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then he said that Assault on Devil's Island was going to be a weekly television series, which never happened. Yes. And that the whole NWO was going to be on hand the next week. Even Kevin Nash. They're going to have a big announcement. Yuji Nagata beat Psychosis with the Nagata lock. And
I'm pretty sure that during this match, they probably spent the whole time talking about what the big announcement was. Speculating on what the big announcement was the next week.
The big.
They would have a match. The big announcement by the NWO. They probably talked about it through this whole match. This is why they would put a match like this on the show. You know.
Yes. they had, Psychosis was with Sonny Ono, but now he's not anymore. And Tony Schiavone says that Psychosis was offered 100 pesos as severance pay. And Mike Tenay says that since he's in Mexico recently, 100 pesos is like $13. And Larry Zbyszko says, but you could live for 5 years on $13 in Mexico.
That's a pretty good line.
Yes. I mean, it really was. That's why I mentioned it. And
it's like when Jerry Lawler said on Raw one time, he said, or Jim Cornette said on Raw, he said, like, then they were going up against, like, Savio Vega or something. He said, like, Puerto Rico is, like, the second biggest city in New York or something like that.
Oh, yeah. The funniest Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, back and forth went to it. Godfather was saying roll a fatty for this pimp daddy, and Jim Ross asked Jerry Lawler, hey King, have you ever rolled a fatty? And King says, I pushed you up a hill once, which is like, I laughed very loud at that. It was a great line. It was just one of those things that, like, you know, that worked perfectly. So, Disco Inferno comes out. And he is just standing in there. Then all of a sudden, like, a siren goes off. And Saturn comes in and just beats the shit out of Disco and wins the TV title.
Yeah.
I thought this was awesome. I loved it. And the Rings of Saturn was awesome. It was just...
Yeah, I Saturn, he was always a good performer in my book.
Yeah, he did very well. Have you seen that interview with Saturn like it was done by Bill After a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
A month ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, man, that guy's been to places the past couple years.
Been homeless?
Yeah, he's a homeless drug addict. Yeah. Yeah, like Saturn, a lot of people tried to get a hold of Saturn the past couple of years. And no one
Everybody
could find him.
Dead. Yeah, I mean they, people tried to get a hold of him when I think when Benoit died and when John Cronus died from the Eliminators. Nobody could get a hold of him. He's like when Bam Bam Bigelow all those years, and nobody get a hold of him.
Yeah, it was just sad. Yeah, Bam Bam, like, no one could get a hold of him, and then he just suddenly died, correct?
Yeah, he died of a drug overdose or something, and I mean, nobody had heard from him in years or something like that. And Saturn, I believe the story was that it was, like, many years ago, didn't he interrupt a rape and he got, like, shot in the neck or something?
Yes.
Try to save some girl from getting raped or something like that?
Yes. I remember vaguely that. I mean, I do remember it happening. Like, I do remember people talking about it. We'll have to look more up about that next week and see.
And then it was only like last year that somebody found him on Facebook. That way everybody found out about him, where he was.
Yeah, and like now he's back and wants to wrestle again. And just, yeah. All right. Flair comes out for an interview. So that he's been looking for Kurt Hennig. I imagine Ric Flair running through the building 3 times and he hasn't found him yet. Just picture that. Like, hey, El Dandy, have you seen, him? And I don't know.
Well, people did show up late back then, so, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
It was a 3-hour show, people would show up when they wanted.
Ric Flair invites every single member of the NWO to come down and take away his robe that he's wearing. And he said that he's going to try winning World War III. Like, that's fucking going to happen. And he's focusing on taking out Kurt Hennig for life. So, okay, Ric Flair, being cool.
I wouldn't even want to be in fucking World War III, much less win the damn thing.
Yes, Jesus. Yes. All right, Scott Hall loses to Chris Jericho. This is that Scott Hall changes the finishes.
Yeah, he changed the finish of this match, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yes, he goes to pick up Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho rolls him up. And it was just, I don't know.
This is when he came out with, like, they had their own tag team championship belts.
Yeah.
Remember
the
when
whole
they...
Thing,
when...
The whole thing about this, though, it just... What's... If Chris Jericho could beat Scott Hall, why does Zabisco even want to... You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah. Well, Larry Zabisco thinks he's bigger than Chris Jericho, apparently. From,
that is true. So this is why. This is why. You were my angle, you son of a bitch. Chris Jericho could beat Scott Hall, but Zabisco can't. So,
did Jericho get destroyed after this match?
Yeah, I believe so. Just gets outsider's edge. And so does the referee, actually. Ric Flair beats Alex Wright with figure four. There's a sign that says Alex Wright needs dance lessons. They had a good little
match.
That's
not
match.
True.
I know it's not true. I know. Alex Wright was very underrated, I thought. They had a really good match here.
It's a Luchador's match. Damien, Viano 4, El Dandy, Viano 4... Beyond a four,
I skipped it on purpose.
Oh, this was a battle royal. Oh, you missed it on purpose. I'm sorry. You must not want to talk about this.
I do not.
Well, I see the ending, so I just can see why you didn't want to talk about it. So, the Giant came out and destroyed all the luchadors. That's all you need to know.
Yes. Mongo McMichael wrestles Ray Traylor, of all people. Okay? Ray Traylor, the big boss man. And Mongo gets distracted by Bill Goldberg. The boss man slam. But they can't call it the boss man slam. They can't call it the boss slam. They can't call it the Garden Angel Slam because he's changed his gimmick so many. It's not the Big Bubba Slam. It's now called the Ray Traylor Spike Slam.
God.
The Ray Traylor Spike Slam.
Yeah, like awesome. I couldn't just see that it was Ray Traylor that did the fucking move.
Yeah.
Of course it's a Ray Traylor Spike Slam. He just did it.
Yeah, I know.
Like when Stevie Richards was wrestling and they called everything the Stevie Kick, the Stevie Bomb, the Stevie Plex. Okay.
That's because Joey Styles was not a good announcer. Even though a lot of people give him credit, he doesn't deserve it. DDP comes out for an interview and he is billed as the founder and the originator of the Diamond Cutter. The founder of the Diamond Cutter. Oh, boy.
That's not true at all because... I believe the person that first originally probably who Johnny Ace in All Japan.
Yeah.
Ace Crusher, and then even Bubba Ray Dudley in ECW.
Yeah, the Bubba Bomb. You're at the Bubba.
Yeah,
Bomb.
The Bubba, or the Bubba Cutter or whatever. DDP even got in a match on Saturday night, and after he beat a guy, he looked in the with the Diamond Cutter. He looks in the camera and said, "Thanks, Bubba Ray."
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah. I vaguely remember. It's one of those things I remember. I read it in a magazine or in a dirt sheet or something one time. But yeah, he said that.
Oh, that's awesome. DDP says that he's living a dream and he's loving every minute of it. DDP.
He's been getting his ass kicked every week.
Yeah, but like, the people that don't know who DDP is, which most people that are watching or listening to this show know who DDP is, but. He's just this 45-year-old guy with bleach blonde hair that just speaks in cliches. Just all cliches. And just, I mean, you had to love him for it, though. You had to love him for it. So
I couldn't say anything bad about DDP. He worked his ass off to get where he was. I don't care what anybody said.
He did. The Steiners beat Public Enemy in a Philadelphia street fight. This match was awesome. It was.
I believe
and
this
I was
happy. Rick actually got busted open in this match.
Yes. And it was just, I mean, they went all over the place, and it was just a good match. Just really, really good stuff. Lex Luger beat Kurt Hennig by DQ. He has him in the torture rack. Then, Ric Flair comes out and he hits Luger. And he does that just so Luger will win the match. And then they run out of time and that is it. And the best thing is like Tony Schiavone will say like, "We're out of time," but the show already ran 20 minutes over already. So what's another, you know, couple of minutes? Just,
yeah, this
just
is when
funny.
they kept going like every now and then they do like a 3-hour show, but then every now and then the 2-hour show would end like it like 2 hours and 30 minutes or something. It just, I don't know.
All
they
right.
Finally got to 3 hours. That was, I don't know how I survived 3-hour nitros. I still don't know how I survived it.
Now we are at Nitro on November the 10th of 1997. And November the 9th of 1997 was the Survivor Series in Montreal. And as everybody knows, that Bret Hart was screwed by Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels, and they stole the world title from him. And he was under contract to WCW now. He was an official member of the WCW roster. So a lot of people... A lot of people thought this was still a work, you know. They didn't think that it was.
Yeah, this
was really lasting.
You know, this was kind of when I first got into like getting on the internet because, You know, I had to know what happened here. I mean, I just didn't. It was kind of vague when I was watching Raw. I didn't understand. And then as you go all these different places and reading it, and Dave Meltzer had the best coverage of this. If anybody's a member of WrestlingObserver.com, and they go and Dave has the back issue of the Observer up there from that week from the Montreal Screwjob. It's probably one of the best stories I've ever read in a newsletter.
Oh,
really detailed
great.
On the whole situation. It's really awesome. And also go watch, if you want to see more of it, more detailed, like a backstage look at it, go watch Wrestling with Shadows. That was an awesome documentary by Bret Hart and the whole Montreal thing.
It was, they really caught Bret's perspective in that Wrestling with Shadows.
They were so lucky. They were so lucky to be there for that.
They lucked into it.
Yeah, they really looked into it. I mean, obviously it was surprising Vince would let anybody, film backstage and stuff like that back then. But, back then he was like kind of behind the, they were still like on the bottom end of the ratings and stuff. So he was liable to let anybody do anything, not care. So.
Yeah.
I just remember watching that Wrestling with Shadows and all of a sudden, Vince is limping out of Bret Hart's dressing room. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Hold his
face.
I first
saw that. I remember when it first aired.
I watched it on
A&E. A&E, yes. And boy, was it it really opened my eyes to wrestling. I knew nothing.
Bret Hart's wife is fucking reaming Triple H out in the back for this whole thing.
Everybody
leaned up against the wall, just looking like so solemn, like you're at a funeral or something. It's just nobody knows what to do, or nobody wants to say the wrong thing, or anything like that. And it was really strange.
And Bret Hart, and Shawn Michaels, if he was part of it, and Shawn says, "Like, as God's my witness, I swear to God, I had nothing to do with this." And, of course, he was lying. And
that was Shawn Michaels back then. So.
Yeah, it was. He's a different guy now. Actually, I got to meet Shawn Michaels a couple of weeks ago at a autograph signing. Yeah, he did a car show in Indianapolis. I drove a few hours to get to Indianapolis and waited in line for a couple hours, and I mean, like, I was kind of wondering why it took so long, but, man, I mean, he was the nicest guy to everybody. He was. I mean, just, I got a picture with him and everything. Like, it's my Facebook picture, actually. He was just a super nice guy, said a couple words to everybody, I don't know, it was just awesome. He's a cool guy, so.
Yeah.
So if everybody gets a chance to go to a Shawn Michaels autograph signing, it's worth the time. It really is, because he's a really good guy. All right, so Bischoff comes out with NWO and says that...
they get their little Canadian flags.
Yeah, they all have Canadian flags. And for some reason, Buff Bagwell has one sticking out of his back collar. Just because he's an idiot. So stupid. And Nash comes out with a wheelchair. His legs are covered by a Canadian flag. And just jumps out of the wheelchair, of course. And then he says it's a surprise for Bret Hart. He is going to have everybody sing "O Canada," and then they did. And then the announcers say that Bret Hart is a great second generation wrestler and all that stuff.
I believe Hogan said he passed the initiation, which the initiation was punching Vince McMahon in the face.
Yes.
And immediately when you knew that they said that he was joining the NWO, you immediately knew that it was not going to be the case.
Yes, and me and Gene on his 900 hotline saying that he has information on the backstage confrontation between Bret Hart and Odor backstage the night before. Lord Steven Regal and
didn't say the name.
I have no idea. No idea.
I like he's gonna get sued.
Yeah, exactly. They had so many lawsuits back and forth, and I still think are in court right now. Lord Steven Regal and Squire David Taylor beat Harlem Heat. Just, it was one of those matches that was a big upset, but the whole time they were just talking about Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Jericho beat Disco Inferno. Following a powerbomb into a backbreaker into a lion tamer. So Disco is
getting pushed down the card again.
Yep, I think it's like a couple more weeks.
Yeah. Raven and Saturn and Sick Boy. Attack. Who was it? Billy Kidman. And then Scotty Riggs comes up to help, and then Scotty and Raven stare each other down. So essentially what's going to happen is they're all going to be together anyway, so it doesn't matter. Infighting before they even start.
Wasn't he Katie Vick's brother?
I don't know what it was. I don't know what the
name was. Scott Vick.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just making a bad Larry Zbysko joke there.
No, I know, but there was rumors about it because he was under a WWE contract for a long time.
Yeah, no, we never saw him again. He actually looked halfway decent in WCW with some of the stuff he did. They just never let him, like, do any matches or anything.
Yeah. Glacier beats Barbarian with a chronic kick. Again. Horrible. In WCW, Perry Saturn is now just known as Saturn. So people need to know that. Hogan and Bischoff come out right at the opening of Raw, of course. And
you ever notice that WCW would just use the last names?
Yeah, they would always do that.
Goldberg, Saturn, Kidman.
Yes.
As like that.
They're doing this thing where, like, Sting is actually, like, putting these little hints that, he's coming after Hogan. And he puts this movie poster, because Sting is in a movie.
Shutter Speed.
Coming up. Shutter Speed, it was called. And,
I actually watched that.
And, of course, he's dark in the shadows, but when he's acting, he's acting.
Yeah, I think he was good as Steve Borden in that movie.
Yes, he was. And Saturn beat Benoit by sitting on his chest and holding the ropes for leverage. Just good match, Good match.
Kind of a weird finish. Not really weird, an old school finish.
Yeah. Big Guerrero, the Rey Mysterio. Regain the Cruiserweight title. It was just getting the belt back on him because they were planning on him having the belt anyways. And
that kind of sucked after such a great match to just switch the title like that.
Well, win. He was supposed to win,
Yeah, but still. And then they had a match coming up at the pay-per-view anyway, so I don't know why they took the title off of him now.
Who knows? Macho Man beats Ray Traylor. Too bad Ray Traylor couldn't hit that Ray Traylor slam. But,
I'm looking at somebody pulling down Ric Flair's drawers for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The funniest thing is Randy Savage, while he was walking out, shoved Wildcat Willie on his way to the ring.
Well, I didn't know how I ever beat the shit out of Wildcat Willie. That's okay at Worldwide, but when you're on Nitro, come on. I don't need no fucking Wildcat Wheel.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even need him there. And Savage is walking to the ring. He says, for life. And Bobby Heenan says he should be doing life. Hilarious.
Maybe he knew something we didn't.
Yes. DDP beats Kurt Hennig by DQ because Hennig hit Paige with the belt. Just, you know, whatever. And Lex Luger beat Ric Flair by DQ. Just these big matches, always disqualification. There's no winners because there's interference by the NWO, and then.
I guess this was a deal from the week before when Flair cost Luger that match or interfered with Luger.
That's why. Was this where Sting signs the contract?
No, Sting signed the contract during the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Sting finally got the shit beat out of him.
Yes. Yes, because they put a, they all just, the whole NWO, like, run and just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Finally.
It looks a little bit more interesting into this Nitro.
Yes, it was great. It was great. And, all right, let's go to that go-home show, man.
Okay.
The go-home show for World War III. All right. Which World War III is just such a waste of a show, you know? But we'll get to it.
It's a waste of a match.
Yes. All right, NWO comes out with Scott Hall. Scott Hall does the... Did you come here to see WCW? Did you come here to see the NWO? You know, Zbyszko's trying to come after him, you know, and Kevin Nash says, sit down or I'll cut off your Medicare.
Which, I think Zbyszko wrote that joke for him.
It had to be. Nash made fun of the Giant. Hulk Hogan comes out. And Rick Rude comes out.
Yeah, one of the more notable nights of the Monday Night Wars right here.
Yes, Rick Rude was on a Raw that was taped the Tuesday before this. And it was like a big deal for... this whole thing was a big deal because Rick Rude was on Raw, and he was live on Nitro. And they were really showing that Raw was taped because he shaved his beard off.
He had a beard on Raw, and then had just had a mustache on Nitro.
Yeah, so he really made it look like Raw was low rent at this time, and it worked.
He came out like Nitro started before Raw, I believe, and Rick Rude came out on Nitro before Raw, and like an hour later, he came out on Raw with a beard.
Yes.
I think this was when they were doing like commentary for Raw, and they were doing it like live in the studio. And I think Jim Cornette made a comment like, "Man, that guy sure does get around, doesn't he?" Or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason
I think the whole Bret Hart thing didn't sit well with him.
Yes, that's what happened, yes.
I think he actually quit because of that, or either got the offer and decided to take it because of what happened with Bret in Montreal. And I think that's when, did you ever see the Bret Hart DVD documentary?
I did.
And there's a thing there where he's talking about like all the guys that have died. And he's talking about Rick Rude, and he starts getting choked up and getting all teary-eyed. He says that he'll never forget Rick. He said, "I'll never forget what Rick Rude did for me," and I think this is kind of what he's talking about.
Yes. Yeah, it was just... Yeah, because he left the company for Bret Hart. That's a real friend, you know, that is. It's a real friend right there.
Yeah.
So good for Rick Rude. To be honest, I always liked Rick Rude. I always did. I thought he was a great wrestler. He was a good heel. He could have been world champion and been over as a world champion heel. And one of my favorite, ever since I like, you know, people can make fun of me all they want for my classic superstar toys that I collect. So I like collecting, like, the old people, like the older wrestlers, like, you know, like I've been looking forever for, like, the Briscoe brothers, and I still can't find them. And, like, Chief J. Strongbow, and I really like that. But, like, my favorite, like, of the Mattel classics that have come out is probably the Rick Rude figure. It just, it looks just like him, comes with a robe.
Which era
was
it from?
He was, like, the WCW era. He has short hair.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I mean, you and me, we always talked about, like, a 92 WCW was our favorite time to watch, and he was, like, the top heel there at that time.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Like, to be honest, like, my most anticipated, like, a lot of those WCW people are going to be made into that Legends line, like, that is coming out, like, from Mattel. And, like, let me give people a little toy lesson. Jack Specific was the people that put out the classic superstars that you've probably seen in stores for the last 10 years or whatever. And then ever since Mattel's taken over, they seem to do it like just so much better. Like this next line coming up, not the next line coming out, like that's coming out in like to stores like within a month, is like Macho Man, Akeem, Bam Bam Bigelow, and the model Rick Martel. And the model even has like a jacket with a button that says, "Yes, I am a model." But like after that, they're actually coming out with like Kevin and Kerry Von Erich, which,
oh wow,
you know, there's two Kerry Von Erichs. One of them is Texas Tornado, and one of them is just Kerry Von Erich. And it's just like,
I wonder if it has the square boot.
I really don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see you know, attention to detail they go, but they get so elaborate. They have these things called defining moments, where it's like an actual moment in time with wrestling, and they have a rock one where it's like from This Is Your Life, and it comes with like a Rock and Sock jacket, and like he's wearing the same exact thing he wore that night, or you know when the Ultimate Warrior wrestled the Macho Man at WrestleMania 7?
Yeah.
And he had those like the knee pads. One of them had like Macho King's face. The other one had the Warrior's face. And like on the back of his tights, it had like the belt, and it says like, "This means so much more than this," or something like that.
Oh yeah.
They made that into a figure. And it's just like it looks exactly like it. It's just,
yeah, I love the attention to detail, like all these things. And this is like you know, like when, like maybe a Star Wars figure will come out and you'll have, you know, like a Star Wars geek will like look it over and he'll be trying to point out something's wrong. Chewbacca's hair really wasn't parted like this on this side or in the back.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
You know, but I love the attention to detail, and I really haven't gotten into doing that and getting those figures, but you know, I've seen, like, pictures of them and stuff like that, and they're just fucking awesome looking. If I was
yes,
a kid,
exactly.
I'd like being Kevin, because I'd be buying all this stuff.
Well, the whole thing was, when I was a kid, I used to collect the Hasbro figures. And they're, like, the little tiny ones. And I used to collect them all the time. And, you know, of course I stopped. But then, I never even thought to buy a wrestling figure at all. Like, I never even thought until, like, 6 months ago, I was walking in, like, I think it was a Target or something, and I saw a Dusty Rhodes. It was, like, a polka dot Dusty Rhodes. I was like, wow, this is awesome. So I'm like, I'll buy it, you know? I bought it, and, like, I saw that, like, there was a, like, I opened it up because I was going to, you know, just, you know, see what it was. And they actually had, like, the Dusty Rhodes splotch on his stomach. Like, you know, the... I swear to God, it's there. And I was just like, oh, my God. And so then out of nowhere, like, eventually, like, a couple of months later, I found that I had all of them. I had all of the Legends, like, that they come out with. So those are the ones that I'm going to collect. They come out with, like, four of them every 3 months or something like that. So I'll just collect those Legends.
When I was much younger and, like, maybe in the late 80s and mid-80s, late 80s, I got, like, a few of those big rubber WWF figures that were so hot at the time. But
yeah, they're called the LJN.
Yeah, but the only thing with those was, I'm a kid. I want to play with stuff. You can't do anything with those things, man.
No. They're horrible.
So I figured out, like, the best thing I found for, like, as a kid, as a wrestling fan, was I would just buy, like, because I was into G.I. Joe, and I would just use my G.I. Joe figures to have wrestling matches. Because you could do anything with those motherfuckers.
I did the same thing.
I could sit there and have a whole match.
Yes. Well, because you could, like, the way that they're made now is, like, they have two different kinds. They have, like, they're called the basics, which just, like, their legs just move, like, up and down, and
yeah. That's
it. And they have the elites, which are, like, kind of like big G.I. Joes. They have, like, a bunch of points of articulation and stuff like that. And I don't play with mine, obviously. Like, I just use mine for display. But there's so many awesome things that, like, they come out to, you know, that they came out with. They actually have a ring. Remember, like, the rings, like, when we were kids? They're just, like, you know, it looked like the wrestlers were giants. Now that they actually have scale rings. So the ring is, like, actually a scale to the figure. So, like, it's, like, you know, it's probably 2 feet by 2 feet. And, like, so a wrestler in there actually looks like there's a wrestler in the ring or whatever. So
I just never understood why, you know, if somebody would have taken, like the, you know, the blueprint for, like, a G.I. Joe figure and made a wrestling figure out of it, they'd make millions of dollars.
They actually did. They did do that.
Did they?
Yes, it was actually Jax did it as, like, a last-ditch effort to save, like, the WWE contract. They're called, like, Building Brawlers. They came. I actually have a couple of them. Like, they came out with, like, even classic Building Brawlers. They're exactly like G.I. Joes, and they're just WWE figures. I mean, they're the exact same size and everything. It's just...
cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool, but... You know, there's just some ideas seem like they're $1 million, and you know they just fail. But Mattel has done so much for that line that you know, like that's actually what's bankrolling this. Like you know how WWE is still making money is because of that. They're still making money because the Mattel line is so successful. It's just awesome. It's just cool how that works out. All right.
That's what happens when you go PG. You get licenses like that.
Oh yeah, but it's a great one to have. You know, we have had so many like just different segues on this show tonight. Apparently, I'm doing a later show. Just makes for a more interesting conversation, Couture.
Yeah. Or either I'm John drunk right. And just want to talk about, you know, different shit.
All right. So,
I don't know where we were.
We're after the match, Ming and Barbarian start beating the shit out of Glacier. Ernest the Cat Miller tries to make it a save, and he gets the shit beat out of him, too. So
good. But I like seeing Ming run rush out over these sorry bastards, you know?
Yes, this was around the time that there was a rumor that there was going to be a WCW Tough Man division. Do you remember this?
I vaguely remember that. It's one of those things you talk about one week and never heard about it again.
Yes. There's this, like, supposed to be this Tough Man division with, like the guys like Goldberg and Ming that were just, like, you know, legitimately tough wrestlers, and it was just goofy.
Now, before the Ming match, I'd see that Ray Trailer came out for an interview, and I remember this distinctly. He came out challenging everybody. He said the NWO... Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, Mr. Perfect, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So you got yelled at for that one.
He's probably coked up. He just didn't realize it. All right, DDP said
they
that...
They gave him a stupid fucking name for his finisher. Razor Spike.
Actually, I think that's a great finisher name. I think it's awesome. It's not as good as Crossroads.
How about the trailer park? Couldn't that be a good move, the trailer park?
Yeah, the trailer park slam. There you go.
All right, Alex Wright beats Mongo by DQ because Mongo shoved Nick Patrick. So, go Mongo. oh my gosh, everybody sitting down? All right. Mongo versus Goldberg has been signed for World War III. This is one of the matches that just, you know, immediately called my local cable provider and ordered this pay-per-view because this is...
Actually, the only reason Goldberg was taken off then, so, I enjoyed, like, just seeing Goldberg, not so much Mongo.
I wasn't into Goldberg yet. I wasn't a big fan of his yet.
Because I could see that they were doing something with him. It wasn't just going to be some, like, every other dude, so...
This is actually a good line from Zbyszko. Tony Schiavone, isn't it nice to watch the Nitro Girls? Zbyszko, I'd rather punch Scott Hall in the mouth. Oh, man. Gotta love him. All right, Rey Mysterio. Oh, just for the record before we start in that next match, like, for all the shit that I say about Larry Zbyszko and how he's just awful and says those, like, mean things, at the same time, I loved him. I mean, you know what I mean? Did you like him?
I love Larry. I did not like watching him wrestle.
No.
I'll be honest with you, because I thought it was boring as fuck. But, you know, as far as promos go, he was incredible. He was like one of the best.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so surprised how over he got with the Nitro audience. I mean, I don't want anybody to say he wasn't over. He was over.
Well, he was. All right, Ray Jr. versus Chris Jericho. They announced during this match at the biggest Nitro ever. It's going to be at the Georgia Dome on January 25th. And
this was the first ever meeting with Jericho and Ray.
Yes, they shake hands. Had a hell of a match.
Yeah, I remember this match because I think this is where Jericho just first started doing this move, and it's because Rey Mysterio is so light, he would do, like, the stuffed power bombs, and he would pick him up, like, for a second time.
Yeah.
Remember when he powerbombed him and then pick him up again? I think this is the first match I ever saw him do that in.
No, he did it before. He did it with the other smaller guys. I've seen him do it before, but, yeah, he went to do it a third time, and he went to the well one too many times, as they would say, and he lost.
And good Jericho battle, was huge next to Ray.
Oh, yeah.
Ray was small back then.
Oh, yeah, very, very small.
I mean, people think he's I mean, he's small now, but, I mean, back then he was just like, you know, you're beating up a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah. All right, Benoit cuts a promo saying that he doesn't think Brett's going to join the NWO. Okay, they all go after Larry Zbyszko of the NWO because Bischoff's going after, or Bischoff talks shit to Zbyszko. Zbyszko tries going after him. Larry comes down, but here comes the NWO B team. Then JJ Dillon, or Doug Dillinger tries to stop the NWO. And
love how they have Doug Dillinger trying to stop somebody from doing something.
But it was actually a fan that jumped the railing.
It's like Otis from Mayberry is security.
Yeah,
at least in
ECW
or something, they had those big motherfuckers that you didn't want to fuck with. Or in WWF, they had that big dude with those big fucking arms that was there, had the beard or something around that time.
Yeah.
And I mean,
awesome.
But Doug Dillinger.
He always wore that backwards leather hat.
Yeah, exactly.
Viano 5 loses to DDP.
I'd call this an upset.
Yeah. Yes, it was a Bella Twin type thing where Viano 4 and 5 kept switching out. Of course, DDP beats both of them. And he gave Viano 4 a diamond cutter from the top rope. And Bobby Heenan says, it's Viano 0 right now.
You know, think about some of these Mexican guys, like the Villanos. If we were to watch, like, Mexican wrestling, they'd probably be fucking awesome.
Yeah, sure, but it's American wrestling. Like,
yeah,
you
know. I
know.
Unless they're in there with another luchador, they're not going to look like much.
Bobby Heenan's extremely racist comment, but it's so true that there's just only one Mexican guy and bought 20 masks.
Yeah.
D. Malenko and Eddie Guerrero wrestle a match.
Was that in a
shoot
interview?
No, I think it was in his book.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And it was a double 10-count finish where they did a big belly-to-back off the top rope, and it was just a... Neither of them canceled the 10 count, so it was just pretty cool finish because they didn't do that really on Nitro.
No. Did you ever see any of the Guerrero Malenko stuff in ECW?
I've seen the matches.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they had good matches.
Yeah, I never thought they got the level in WCW as they did in ECW. They weren't given much time, to be honest, though. So.
No. Scotty Riggs comes out, wrestles Saturn, loses. And Riggs, like, finally, he dives on Raven's flock and then still loses. So Scotty
Riggs,
I think
he did that, like, from the ring over the railing, didn't he?
Yeah. But the thing is, like, so Raven's flock is supposed to be getting over by feuding with fucking the jobber Scotty Riggs. Come on. Steiners come out for their match against Vicious and Delicious. And
I always thought that was
Daniel,
a horrible name. I thought that was a terrible name.
Very,
Vicious
very bad. Very, very bad. And then they get beat up by the whole NWO. And then Luger beats Kurt Hennig by DQ because a bunch of interference, of course. And the Giant, who you never see anymore, except for on Saturday night teaming up with Lex Luger to wrestle Men at Work, they have the Giant beat Scott Hall by DQ because then NWO rushes the ring. No one... And then they have, like... But the best thing about this is, like, the NWO is, like, beating the Giant's ass. And who comes for the save? Public Enemy, the Villanos, Chris Jericho, Lord Regal, Dean Malenko, Glacier Ming. You know, it's just like, you know, it's pretty much promoting the World War III pay-per-view, but some just horrible people that come out to the advertisement of World War III. Let's go to World War III,
okay.
Shall we? All right.
Okay.
Our World War III, November 23rd, 1997. Auburn Hills, Michigan, at the Palace. That's where Lockdown was a couple of years ago, I believe.
Where Lex Luger won the world title a few months earlier.
Yes, the Palace of Auburn Hills.
That's
all
where
right.
Lex Luger defeated Yokozuna by count out in 1993 at SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah. Famous arena, everybody. All right. Glacier and Ernest Miller come out. So they're going to wrestle the Faces of Fear. And Faces of Fear win it with a Tongan Death Grip on Ernest Miller.
Thank God.
And they start teasing a little bit of Glacier and Ernest Miller dissension. So... Disco gets his return match against Saturn. This is the debut of Lodi in Raven's Flock, which came out of nowhere, Lodi.
Idol's built backwards because he looked like Billy Idol.
Yes, that's what it was. And
if they Saturn didn't tell us that every match, like we didn't know every match that... Relic is Killer spelled backwards.
Yes, they told us all the time. Mike Tanay. Also, Dragon versus Yuji Nagata. And if Dragon wins, he gets 5 minutes alone with Sonny Ono. This match should have been good, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a it was kind of a boring match, and they didn't mix well together. So I don't know. It just didn't work. Yuji Nagata was still pretty green. He ended up becoming like a really big star in Japan, but you know he wasn't really like
the cruiserweight style guy that Dragon was used to wrestling either.
No. He wasn't at all. So it's an odd match. Have you ever watched that show Storage Wars, Couture?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever watched it. Though.
Oh man, check it out. We will discuss it next week. Storage Wars. We will discuss it next
week.
What's
it about?
It's about like these guys bid on these storage units that are up after the people didn't pay their bills. And you're not allowed to look. You can look inside, but you can't open any boxes, and you can't actually go inside of the storage unit. And then you bid on it, and
you get
whatever's
inside.
In there. Yeah, but you don't really know what's in there. Yeah, it is awesome. It's a great show.
What's the best thing somebody's ever like won in a bid?
Well, one guy paid like $2,000 for a bunch of boxes, and ended up being this like really elaborate comic book collection. That he ended up making like $150,000.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. So that'd be.
I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's a pretty good show. The Steiners are defending their tag titles up against Steve Regal and Dave Taylor.
That's weird.
Yes. And the Steiners win with a top rope bulldog, which is expected. And there's a match between
Raven and Riggs,
Scotty Riggs,
I believe. Yeah.
Yes, and J.J. Dillon says that this is going to be Raven's last match until he signs the contract. So Raven wins with the DDT, and he wants him to join, and then Van Hammer with his friggin' nurple piercing carries Riggs into the crowd. So apparently this is like when
talk about a name from the past just showing up randomly. Van Hammer.
Yeah, of all people.
Like, I don't want to see him unless he's wrestling Mick Foley.
Yes. hang on. Goldberg was attacked by in this match. Before the match, wasn't Goldberg attacked by Alex Wright?
No, I believe it was Steve McMichael with a pipe, and he got his ring back.
Oh yeah. And what a bait and switch this was.
Yeah.
Alex Wright comes out. Mongo went to the Tombstone Piledriver.
Yeah, Deborah dragged Alex to the ring, and he wasn't like excited about this, and then he just got squashed.
Yeah. Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero, cruiserweight title. Eddie Guerrero could have won the title back here, but he won it a couple weeks ago. But he defends it.
Yeah.
Not as good as the Halloween Havoc match, but it's still a pretty good match. There's some good matches. Kurt Hennig versus Ric Flair.
They do like
match.
The titles before the. On the free shows before the pay shows, I think title changes. I think should generally be like on the pay shows. I think, especially
yeah.
if you're just gonna have the same finish as you do on free TV like a few weeks before.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Kurt Hennig versus Ric Flair. Kurt Hennig wins because Flair has the figure four. Kurt hits him with the U.S. title. It's a pin. Awesome match. Seriously, awesome match. They go back and forth. They actually got time, too, so it was a pretty good match. And you ready?
Yeah, but again, Flair has to lose.
Yes, of course.
Kind of kills the program right there, you know.
you know, it's three rings. What is it, 60 men in World War III, right?
Yeah.
Yes, and the last 10 people, Hall, Randy Savage, Buff Bagwell, Kurt Hennig, and Vincent, of all people, versus the Giant, Lex Luger, Booker T, Rick Steiner, and DDP. This is where they're really doing a lot with Booker T, don't you think? Like at this time,
because this is like right before they like give him the TV title, you know?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Start his big push.
I thought it was pretty cool. So what ends up happening is Kevin Nash comes out just like Sting. Hits the Giant with the bat. Scott Hall ends up winning. Flat finish. Even though at the time I marked that huge sell of Scott Hall at this point. So I was like very, very excited about this. But all right, so next week, everybody, we're going to be discussing Starrcade, which is the WCW WrestleMania, and this is the biggest one ever. This is the biggest pay-per-view WCW ever put out. And it was...
This was probably, I'd say, the biggest pay-per-view they ever did. This is probably the best built-up pay-per-view that WCW ever did that ended up being, like, one of the worst.
Yes, it ended up...
It was the beginning of the end is what I call Starrcade 97.
Yes, it was. It was. This is officially the beginning of the end. People read the death of WCW and all that stuff, but... I mean, we're gonna get you there, but I mean, this is some pretty bad shit that you're gonna get to. So next week we'll be back. It might be a late night show again. It probably will be. We're gonna be recording these late, but you know, everybody can download them the next day or listen live, whatever they want to do.
Doesn't matter.
But
it doesn't matter.
It does not matter. So thanks everybody for listening. It's been a fun show. Great to be back. It was really fun, Couture. It was, you know, good doing this again.
Tomorrow night, Over the Top Radio, we're going to be on it at 7 Eastern, 6 Central. So.
All right, and don't forget to check out superfriendsuniverse.com for all of our archives and all that good stuff. So everybody check that out. We'll be back next week on Thursday, probably late. And we will have another show for you. So everybody, take care. Goodbye.